You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome to a Winter Weathery Advisory Monday edition of the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. If the sound sounds a little bit different, it's because myself, John, I'm not recording in my typical place because usually I'm recording out in the garage. I got a little sound area set up out there that's a little bit different, but it's stinking cold outside. So I'm not recording out there. I'm recording in my living room, and so it might sound a little bit different to you. But just bear with us this week. We're going to make it work for you anyway. But I'm John Williams, and thank you for joining the show. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. For the best tasting protein bar on the market, go to builtbar.com. David, it's the best tasting protein bar, right?
No doubt about it, bro.
No doubt about it. And we'll talk to you more about Built Bar later. But joining me today, as he does all the time, is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_walk74. And you can also hear him on the Iron Horse podcast with NFL cornerback Brandon Carr. David, how's it going?
Man, it's going well. I don't want to brag down here in Frisco, Texas, but we are, as it stands right now, we are, unlike you guys up north in Oklahoma, we are in double digit weather. We're at 10 degrees right now. Okay. So It's really cranking it up down here in Frisco with the double figures, 10 whole degrees. And I'm seeing 3 degrees in Norman, 3 degrees in OKC, 7 degrees back home in Fort Gibson, USA. Yep. But man, I'll tell you somewhere that it was not cold. You know where that was on Saturday around noon? Morgantown, West Virginia.
Morgantown, West Virginia.
It wasn't cold in there. Double overtime, thriller. On ESPN Plus, which that's a conversation we can have sometime about that whole scheduling disaster. ESPN, the worldwide leader. Nice job scheduling a top 15 matchup on a really shaky, shoddy Wi-Fi necessary webcast. But hey, the game, fantastic if you were able to catch it.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game. And I got to tune in for the second half of that because I was getting my family kind of up to her in-laws so that they would have a fireplace. And because I might have to work quite a bit more because of the inclement weather, I'm sitting now in a 58 degree house in front of my gas fireplace in 2 long sleeve shirts, 2 pairs of pants, 2 pairs of socks, my stocking cap. And yeah, here we go. Let's talk about that hot, that fire Morgantown game.
Now that we know what John's wearing on Valentine's night, just double layered up. Now
that's right.
Basketball.
That's right. We're the anti-romance. But yeah, man, that basketball game, that was something else, man. It was incredible to watch. Just two good teams that played a really good defense, I felt like, and made a lot. And these guys were making a lot of contested shots. And there were times in that game where I just felt like, okay, Oklahoma is about to pull away here. And then West Virginia just stormed back. So, man, just off the top, just give me your, couple of takeaways.
Well, in the next segment, I want to give you 3 things I like, 3 things I didn't like, and kind of get real specific. But I'll just kind of give the broad scope assessment. I felt like this was one of those basketball games when you go on the road in conference play and you already have a win in hand over a team like West Virginia, a team that's proud, a team that's hot right now, that was coming off back-to-back top 25 wins, a team that wants the win back that they gave you in Norman. And they would probably say, if you polled those guys, they probably felt like they gave it to them. They probably said, man, we let Emoji Gibson almost go off for 30 on us. We just can't do that. They probably felt like that was a game they should have had. So when you have their complete attention and you go into their home environment for the sweep on the season, you're going to get not only their best shot, but you're going to get every single thing they have that day. You're not sneaking up on them. Now, all of a sudden, you're not the Oklahoma that was unranked and nobody thought was any good when you beat them the first time. Now you're this hot team that everybody's talking about. You're trendy. Kruger's getting coach of the year conversation started. And now, all of a sudden, like the Sooners arrived in Morgantown, they were ready to go. West Virginia was. They're feeding it to the big man that Oklahoma has shut down the last 3 times. And I felt like that was a matchup that Bob Huggins did a great job exploiting that on the block. He had Culver going right at Brady Manek. Oklahoma's going small. That was the matchup they were going to exploit. But I felt like Oklahoma did a great job in the first half of defending the perimeter. They held West Virginia without a 3-point shot until the disaster at the end of the half of the the bank three from half court that shouldn't have taken place. And we'll talk about that next segment, but just did a really good job of limiting West Virginia and making them have to go inside and get those 2-point buckets and really have to battle right there. But really just down the stretch, I felt like it was one of those things that at any given time, Oklahoma could have lost that game in regulation, in overtime, or in double overtime. And everybody, the committee, fans, pundits would have said, man, what a great effort. Tough loss on the road. You know, a lot of things went wrong for Oklahoma. A lot of 50-50 balls, a lot of 50-50 calls didn't go their way. Fouls didn't go their way. And everybody would have given them every reason in the world to lose that game, go on down the road and play the next one. And they still found a way to win. And that's the kind of game that when you have every reason to lose and be justified in losing and you still win, that's a special basketball team.
Yeah, and I think you spoke to it a little bit on Twitter. You said it was a gutsy win, and I think that was absolutely what it was. And it was really a gutsy performance for both teams because, again, West Virginia at one point in the second half got down by 9 points, and it would have been really easy for them to just kind of lay down. And I think that was with like about 5 minutes left to play in the game, and it would have been easy for them to just kind of lay down and like, all right, they got us again. Oh, well. But, you know, Bob Huggins' team is just not going to do that. They're a well-coached basketball team in their own right. And they actually got the lead late in the second half. And Oklahoma, again, had to storm back in it to tie the game late. And, it was probably one of the best college basketball games I've seen in a long time. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of college basketball as we lived overseas, and that was not a sports priority for me at the time. But it was just a tremendous game. And to be able to go to two overtimes and watch that, my heart started pounding. It felt like the 2011 finals for the Mavericks as I'm watching that game, just because of the intensity in the back and forth matchup. And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, man, has Austin Reeves had a break at all in this game? And it seemed like the entire second half and the two overtimes, he was just playing every single minute. And I looked back at the box score, he played 47 minutes. But as impressive as that was, Emoji Gibson played 49 minutes out of a 50-minute basketball game. I was just blown away by that.
Yeah, and we talked about that on the preview show. The fact that they didn't have the Baylor game on Wednesday, that was postponed. They got a full week to rest. And you go into that matchup and you're healthy, you're fresh. You're going to put it all on the line right there to get that win. You're not going to save guys. You're not going to manage minutes. You're going to get that win on the road. When you got a chance to get the win on the road, you take it. You worry about the minutes later. This isn't the NBA where we worry about minutes and preserving guys and all of those kind of things. So I felt like that was to their credit, obviously, that they played their best guys. They kept the rotation short. And as long as foul trouble doesn't dictate that they can't do that, I think that's what you're going to see from them going forward, is you're going to see a tighter rotation as long as they can get away with it. Now, one other impressive thing about this game is you had Brady Manick and Austin Reeves play both overtimes with four fouls and not foul out. And Harkless also had four fouls. He ends up fouling out. And it is hard to play with four fouls and not go soft. Like, a lot of guys can't play. They're so concerned with getting that fifth foul that they might as well not even be out there because they can't cover and they can't defend with four fouls. It's a psychological thing. So the fact that they were able to, for the most part, at least Reeves, Manick, he had a tough matchup. I mean, let's just call it what it was. Culver is 6'10", physical. That was a mismatch that West Virginia exploited. Guy dang near dropped 30 on us. And, you know, that was just a tough matchup for Manick. But the fact that those guys were able to stay on the floor and be your seniors, be your leaders all the way to the end. Another big part of that game was, you know, not only the minutes that those guys were playing, but also the fact they were able to stay on the floor in spite of the foul trouble that they were, you know, occurring.
Yeah. And so real quick, before we go to break, you had five guys in double figures. It seems to be a routine at this point that they're able to get that many guys in double figures. Austin Reeves leads the way with 28 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Emoji Gibson, 19 points, 2 assists. Brady Manick, almost a double-double with 11 points, 9 rebounds. And just a good, just all-around effort by everybody. But again, Austin Reeves, obviously the player of the game, just with everything he was able to do, not only in the box score, but just controlling the flow of the basketball game. And we talked about it last week, just how important he is to their rhythm, both offensively and defensively. I feel like he just provides so much. And we talk about it, the leadership and just that stability and that presence that he is on the floor for as long as he was on the floor for 47 minutes. And you mentioned they played both overtimes with four fouls. And it seemed like they played the majority of the second half too, with four fouls. And you're right. It didn't take them out of their games and it didn't get into their heads that they had four fouls. They just did what they had to do. And, you know, you could argue some of those calls that got them to four fouls were a little bit soft, but we can talk about that in the next segment. It's because one of the things that I didn't like, but yeah, we'll dig more into this game. It was a huge win for Oklahoma. They now are second in the Big 12 conference with just a few games left in regular season play before getting to the Big 12 tournament. And things are really looking up for Oklahoma. And we'll continue to talk about that next here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. But first, let me tell you about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. Major League Baseball is right around the corner. And BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. You can get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. So go to betonline.ag because they've got you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. If you head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit by using the promo code LOCKEDON. So go to betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And we're covering everything you need to know about the Oklahoma Sooners, but what about the rest of the sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And now in this segment, David and I, we're going to give you our three things that we like and three things that we didn't like. And so, David, I'm going to let you go first. Tell me the three things that you liked about this game.
Well, I'll start with the guy that we talked about the most in segment one, and that's Austin Reeves. You know, I just feel like the fact that he's able to take control of a basketball game is huge, because while this team is the sum of its parts, and we, you know, had some conversations on Twitter with some of our listeners about, you know, Davion Harmon trying to do too much with the balls, sometimes getting, you know, not being strong enough with the ball. And one of my biggest takeaways from this team all season long is this team gets in trouble when guys try to do too much and try to play outside of themselves, when guys play within the team. And that's not saying guys are selfish. I'm just saying when they try to do too much, they dribble the ball too long. They try to go make a play instead of just moving the ball, cutting, moving, sharing it, keeping it fluid. This team is not as efficient as they can be. But the exception to that is Austin Reeves. And now listen, Austin, you know, at the end of the game, we had a chance to win the basketball game and he dribbled around too much, shot a three that, you know, I feel like we could have got a better shot. So that's not to say that he does all the right things all the time, but he's the best player on this team. If somebody's got to be the guy, it's him. And he's able to take control, and he chose to take control and hit the game winner, get a good shot. He didn't settle for some 18-foot fadeaway or some step back three that a lot of guys take that easy way out, because that's an easier shot to get off. It's a lower percentage shot to take that. You know, I'm just going to dribble it out here at the top of the key. I'm going to fake the drive, step back, shoot a contested three because I can get that shot off. Because if I drive, I might turn it over. I might get a foul and not get called. So it takes a little bit of confidence and assertiveness to go get the shot that he got from 14 feet in the lane and go, you know, his body going to the basket to get that shot to win the basketball game. It's a higher percentage shot, but it takes some guts and some fortitude to go get that shot and not settle for something else. So that's one thing I liked, was Austin Reeves just taking control, being the leader, and going and making plays. I also like the return of Brady Manick's confidence. While he only had 11 points, some of the threes he's knocking down now, and some of the threes he's even missing, he's stepping into them with confidence. And you give me confidence over prowess all day long, especially on the road. I'd say the same thing about Harkless. He's not the best shooter in the world. I don't want him taking 10, 12 shots a game. But hey, I'll tell you what, when he does fire one up, he thinks it's going in. So you give me the confident guy over the guy that's skilled all day long when you're on the road. But the last thing I liked was just the defensive tenacity. Like we talked about last segment, a million reasons why they could have lost that game. Down the stretch, they just found a way to get the stops. So I feel like that defensive tenacity is the calling card for this basketball team, and it showed up again.
Yeah, and I'll add a couple more. As far as players go, Umoja Gibson, man, his release is so quick. it seems like he's shooting it from his hip, like he's a gunslinger, just pulling that thing out and just firing it off. And it's impressive to me that he can do it and do it with such accuracy. He's lethal from the 3-point line. And again, we've talked about it a lot, but you need a guy like that that can hit a three at any given notice, especially when you get in a tournament time and it's three-point shooting and defense that's going to win a lot of basketball games in March. And then the other thing I think is impressive, and this will come to one of the things that I didn't like, but it's their ability to keep their composure while all the negative things were going on around them. We'll talk about it in a second, but I felt like a lot of the calls that were going against them, it seemed like most of the calls, if not all, and I don't want to get into a big officiating discussion, but a lot of things were going against them at West Virginia. And they just continued to play even after they lost the 9-point lead, gave West Virginia, I think it was as many as 5 points late in the game, 5 or 6 points late in the game. And they continued to keep their composure, continued to battle. And you talked about defensive tenacity. And I feel like that's just a testament to their team as a whole and the character that they have on their team as a whole is that they just keep battling. They keep battling. And then the final thing is Kirk Huath, man, came up with a huge play at the end of the second overtime where, you know, they're driving the lane and he steps into it and just both hands up, blocks a shot and forces them into, you know, what I think it was like 3 seconds left to play, 3 or 4 seconds left to play.
Forced a turnover before that was... He knocked it off of Culver. He blocked it with two hands and bounced off Culver, right. And then Oklahoma gets the ball. Now, for me, that leads into one of the three things I didn't like was after that play. After that play, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, not only did Lon Kruger just have the coaching move of the game by this offense and defensive substitution he was doing with Kirk Huath and Manek, but then Kirk Huath comes in and makes the play of the game at that point. He preserved the win. Reeves had hit the game winner, essentially. Queth blocks the ball two hands out of bounds. All OU has to do is inbound the ball and go make 2 free throws. Mm-hmm. They have a timeout in their pocket. I believe they had 2 timeouts, actually, but they at least had one. Austin Reeves, love him. He's got to go get it. He's got to get open and get that inbounds pass. Like, they got to get it to him. He's an 88% free throw shooter. They have to find a way to get it to him, but they couldn't. And so they inbound it to Davion Harmon, who was the point guard last year. He's a sophomore. He has played point guard, probably played point guard many, many years in his life. He gets the ball on the baseline. They're trapping. They're trying not to foul, kind of, but they're going to try to go get the jump ball. And when you have a timeout right there, you cannot, under any circumstances, allow that to happen, mm-hmm. that jump ball that took place. You got to know the possession arrows in their favor, and you got to know that before the ball is even touched. You have to know, I got a timeout. They got the possession arrow. I can't get tied up. He gets tied up. And all of a sudden, the Kirk Huath block doesn't even matter. 4.7 seconds now, they get the ball under their own basket, down one. And that's so there's one reason Oklahoma could have lost. Like, oh, we made this great play, all for nothing. Inbound the ball, almost get a steal, 3 seconds left. Now they get it back on the side. You know, I mean, it's just, it was a crazy end of the game, but OU's got to be better. And this is the second thing I didn't like. Davion Harmon at the end of the first half, OU gets a stop. They get an offensive foul with 7 seconds left on West Virginia. They get the ball with a chance. They're up 3, get a chance to go up 5, maybe 6 to go into the half, but at least you're going to go into the half up 3, right? I mean, 7 seconds left, you're driving down, you're going to get a bucket or you're going up 3, except for Harmon gets out of control, loses the ball, and they shoot a half court 3 and bank it in at the buzzer. And now it's a tie game. Like, the most ridiculous chain of events ever happened right there. And it was all because he tried to do too much. And the same thing I mentioned earlier is like, guys got to play within themselves, but you have to get a shot off. So there were big time mistakes. So 2 of the 3 things I didn't like just so happened to be involving Davion Harmon. Now he did some great things throughout the game. He had a great drive and finish when they were down 3 to set up Austin Reeves' game winner. He took one at the end of the shot clock, drove it right to the rim, got a good look. So he did some things throughout the game to give them a chance, but the last thing I didn't like, and this is the reason this game went into double overtime in the first place, the defensive rebounding was atrocious down the stretch. I mean, it was like West Virginia was going to shoot till they score, and it didn't matter if they shot and missed and they got 2 free throws, they were going to get the free throw rebound as well. I mean, just Oklahoma could not And some of it was like one time West Virginia shot one so bad. They bricked the three so bad that it almost hit Brady Manick in the face off the backboard and then bounces out to their best shooter, McNeil, who was hot. And he drains a three that might or might not should have counted to tie it at 68 with when the shot clock reset. So again, there's another one. Oh, you know, the shot clock, they cost us that 3 points. The shot clock malfunction, we got homered. So, you know, there's all these different things that took place, but the defensive rebounding has to be better if they're going to play small, which they need to be able to do to maximize their offensive efficiency. So, yeah, that's something they're going to have to clean up. And I know Coach Krueger talked about that in the postgame audio, the little video they shared out there. He mentioned defensive rebounding. So they're aware. They'll fix it.
15 offensive rebounds for West Virginia, 9 for Oklahoma. So they're plus 6 in that category, plus 5 overall in total rebounds. And you're absolutely right. It was a huge difference in the basketball game because Oklahoma outshot West Virginia 44% to 42.4%. In three-pointers, Oklahoma outshot West Virginia 34.4 to 29.2. They made 11, Oklahoma did, from three. West Virginia only made 7. And then, you know, from free throws as well. Like, Oklahoma only shot 10 free throws, but they made all of them. West Virginia got 21 free throws in this game. And that's the thing I didn't like. It seemed like with as seemingly dominant as West Virginia was on the offensive glass, how they didn't foul Oklahoma more. I mean, I've played basketball. I mean, I never played it at a high level, but I've played it. And if you're the defensive rebounding team, you're in a good spot to get fouled more often than not by the team that's on offense, because unless they're just in better position than you, there's no way they should out rebound you that by that big of a margin on the offensive glass, unless they're also fouling you and you're not getting any of the calls. And I felt like that was some of it. Is, you know, like, there were times I felt like, yes, West Virginia was just in better position, but I also felt like there were times that they were just getting the benefit of the doubt from the officiating. And it goes to show in the free throw totals, because it wasn't like what Oklahoma was sitting back and just shooting jump shots. They were driving the basketball to the lane, but not getting any calls. It was wild.
Yeah. And again, that's conference basketball on the road. In any conference, I don't care if you're in Division II, Division III, NAIA, Division I, Power 5, mid-major, I don't care. If there's two teams playing and they're in the same league and one's on the road, when you get on the bus, you know you're not getting calls that night. Like, when you get on the plane, you know you're not going to expect to get the benefit of a whistle. Now, we could have a whole other conversation, John, on a podcast and just dedicate it to why do officials subconsciously have a different whistle for the home team in all sports, but specifically basketball. That's a whole conversation we could have. But I feel like that in this particular matchup, the fact that OU didn't let that bother them the way that Twitter fans let that bother us, you know, all of us, and myself included, I'm looking at the bonus and, you know, Oklahoma is not even in the bonus to start overtime. I mean, they're literally like 2 minutes left in overtime. They're finally in the 1-1 bonus in the first overtime. So it was fascinating, the discrepancy there. But I think that is that's one of the things, and we're going to talk about it in the next segment, about what the ceiling is of this team. I think their ability to withstand that is going to be a huge part of what we talk about next segment as to what their ceiling is and how far they can go. And we'll be back with more to talk about that very thing here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. But now I want to tell you about Built Bar. I know. You guys, I know. Oh, D-Walk, he loves Built Bar. He talks about it all the time. How much has he ordered this week? Well, let me tell you how much I ordered.
J-Dub loves Built Bar too.
J-Dub loves it too. But listen, I love it so much. I happened to sign up for the new little email. You know, you order, hey, do you want to subscribe or know about deals? I check the box, guys. You know why I check the box? For a reason just like this. It's Valentine's Day. And they had a special white chocolate cookies and cream. One day only. Discount code. You know, I just said, I don't even need to ask the wife. She'll like them too. I'm going to order me 18. Why not? Keep them coming, man. Keep them going. So I got another 18 coming. So I'll be digesting those sometime in the next week. But builtbar.com, the best tasting protein bar in the market, 100% covered in chocolate. So many great flavors. My favorites, coconut, cookies and cream, soon to be white chocolate cookies and cream, because I took advantage of the email list, but hey, that's just me. But yeah, go to Locked On, or go use the promo code Locked On at builtbar.com and make sure you get your 20% off. So it's a lot easier to pull the trigger when you're getting that 20% by using the promo code Locked On. And trust me, you will not be disappointed. Eat it after your workout. Eat it before you go to bed. And don't ever feel guilty about it, because it's only 130 calories, 17 grams of protein, 4 grams of sugar. It's a great tasting bar. It's good for you. Go get it at builtbar.com. And don't miss the biggest stories from around college football, as Monday's Locked On College Football host Candace Cooper interviews the local experts on the biggest stories from around the nation. Get the in-depth analysis and insightful breakdowns from those in the know every Monday on Locked On College Football. Subscribe to Locked On College Football wherever you get your podcasts.
And coming up in this segment, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about, maybe what does Oklahoma have a ceiling? Where is their ceiling? Is the roof the ceiling? Is the moon the ceiling? This is a team that's really on a roll, and now they're second in the Big 12. And the NCAA released their first kind of tournament rankings on Saturday, and had Oklahoma pegged as a third seed, which was better than even Joe Lunardi's projection earlier in the week that had them pegged as a four seed. And so, David, I got to ask, man, how high can this team rise?
Well, they were a three seed projection before the West Virginia game started.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second. So here's where I see this team. I think Baylor's a one seed. Baylor's untouchable. Oklahoma can't catch them. They're not going to pass them in the standings. They're not going to pass them in the seeding. They could possibly beat them in Norman. That's on the table. And if for some reason Oklahoma can beat them in Norman and Oklahoma can win out in this regular season, which outside of that Baylor game, whenever it gets rescheduled, I don't even know if they have a date on it yet. I know they got the back-to-back Bedlam games to finish the year at the moment. It's kind of like two games in 3 days there with Caleb Cunningham. That's going to be pretty wild. Oklahoma State's been playing well. But if they could find a way to win out and go into the Big 12 tournament and potentially make a run to the finals and play Baylor, win or lose, regardless, the ceiling for this team, if they can get a win over Baylor in the Big 12 tournament or in Norman, I'm going to go ahead and say the ceiling's a one seed, John. Hmm. And that is, I honestly, I don't even want to say it out loud because I almost feel like it seems kind of blasphemous in a sense, but given where this team was 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I don't see how you can deny the second place team in the Big 12 is at least a two seed. Mm-hmm. So right now, like, they're probably in the conversation for a two seed. They might be the fourth two seed. They might be the third two seed. I don't know, but I think they're on that two seed line right now. So now the question becomes, if they are a two seed, well, there's a lot of basketball left, so they can only, you know, can they play themselves into something else? And I think if you get a win over undefeated Baylor at home, Big 12 tournament or otherwise, that's going to be a win that those other teams you're competing for, that maybe that last one seed spot, they're not going to have a win like that. I mean, ain't nobody going to win over Gonzaga and Baylor right now. So if you're a team that can get one and you got that in your pocket to go with all this laundry list of top 15 wins that they already have in their pocket, then yeah, I think that the one seed is not out of the question. It's not off the table. And it's amazing, this run that they're on. And the fact that they keep winning games and they have every reason to lose, and that they're not making excuses, that they have all the excuses, you know, available to make. And they just say, you know what? Yeah, we see your excuses. We're going to leave them over there. And if it's okay with you guys, we're just going to keep winning basketball games. And you can keep your excuses for somebody else, because right now, all we really care about is the guys in our rotation playing small, short rotation. Doesn't really matter, home or away. We're going to do what we do, and we're just going to win basketball games. So, yeah, to me, the ceiling is a one seed.
And I can't disagree with you. I think one thing that might keep them from becoming a one seed is those five losses that they've got overall. Generally, it seems like the teams that end up with those one seeds are, you know, two, three, maybe, you know, at worst four losses. But given the circumstances of the year that we're in, there's no telling what could happen. I mean, all bets are off at this point. I think right now they should be in line, or they're definitely a three seed, like solidly as we stand right now, they're a three seed. And I even think with like reasonable into the season, like say they don't win out, but maybe, win almost all their games. Maybe they lose one more before the end of the regular season, and then are able to at least make it to the semifinals or the finals of the NCAA tournament. I feel like the floor for this team is easily a four seed. I feel like we've surpassed the floor, and at worst, I feel like no matter what happens the rest of the season, unless they just lose out and then have an early exit in the Big 12 tournament, they're a four seed. I think, you know, they drop one game in the regular season the rest of the way, and that's including the Baylor game. And who knows if that game will even get rescheduled, you know, depending on how tight the schedule is between now and then, you know, but have a really good showing in the Big 12 tournament. I think they're going to be a three seed, you know, but yeah, if they make it to the final and are able to, if they're able to knock off Baylor and win the Big 12, I don't see any reason why they can't be a one seed. I mean, there's a debate right now, who's the best conference in basketball, and Oklahoma is, or the Big 12 is absolutely in the debate with the Big 10. There's no reason why you wouldn't want the top seed or the Big 12 champion as one of your one seeds. Now they could revert back to Baylor and say, well, Baylor had the best kind of stretch and they just lost the one game in the Big 12 championship game. I could also see the tournament committee saying, well, Baylor has a bigger track record, longer track record, and they just dropped the one game. They're still our one seed.
No, I mean, Baylor is going to be a one seed. Oklahoma can win every game and win the Big 12 tournament, and they're not going to keep Baylor from being a one seed. I don't think that that's even part of the
conversation. So you're thinking that there's potential that the Big 12 could end up with two one seeds.
Okay. I absolutely think they could. I think there's precedent for that. The ACC has done it before. And I think that that's the thing that right now, I think, and you kind of alluded to it, the type of season that we're having with COVID. It's an unconventional schedule, less non-conference matchups to draw from. But the fact that Oklahoma, despite their non-conference not being very extensive, they have a loss at Xavier that was not a bad loss. I mean, it wasn't a pretty loss, but it wasn't against a bad opponent. But then you got to have that win over Alabama, and you happen to get Alabama on a hot year. Like, that was huge for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have easily been playing Kentucky this year, and on paper, you would have thought, oh, good, we get Kentucky. That's a great chance to get a quality win. And all of a sudden, like, that win doesn't, you know, that win in a dollar will still just buy you a Coke right now, you know? Right. So, I mean, that's that was very fortuitous for them. But yeah, I think that's where I'm looking at that as a one seed potential, that saying Baylor and Gonzaga, those two are getting one. Like, just go ahead and give them. Now you got two to fight over. But here's the thing. Regardless of if they're a one seed, a two seed, a three seed, a four seed, even if they are a five seed and a four seed, not a big difference to me.
Right.
And the biggest negative to that line is that in the Sweet 16, you get a matchup with a one seed looming potentially. Well, I will certainly talk about this probably as it gets closer to March Madness, when March Madness arrives. But here's the thing about the NCAA tournament. It is strictly about matchups. It's not about seeds. So I'll flesh it out for you in this way. Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K, the best of all time, has had some of the most amazing teams of all time. And on paper, most years you would think, man, Duke should or could win it all. And Coach K one night was talking about, I saw him talking about his team, best teams, and he made a comment saying, you know, some of the best teams he's ever had didn't even make it to a Final Four, much less win it all. And the reason was, like, some of his lesser teams were actually the teams that won the national title, was they got six favorable matchups along the way. So there was always a team or two in their bracket, like, man, shoot, we really don't want to see them in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. And as fate would have it, those teams got knocked off, and they end up finding somebody in that round that was a better matchup for them. So it's really all about finding. It's not about being the best team in America necessarily. It's not about being the most talented team in America. It's, you have to win six basketball games to win the title. So can you find six winnable games through that long and winding road? And so wherever you're seated, that's fine. That's one part of it. But can you find the matchup that you don't have any control of? But when you get those matchups, can you attack and exploit the areas you can prevail? And right now, the guy at the big seat on the bench in Norman, Oklahoma, is finding matchups and exploiting them better than anybody else in the country right now. Mm-hmm. Doing a master class job of matchup exploitation. And so that, for me, is why I think as a seed, they could be a one seed. It's not out of the question. Not realistic probably, but it's possible. But can they make a Final Four? I would say yes, because of those factors alone, because they are going to be the kind of team, regardless of where they're seated, the four teams they'll have to beat, whatever that run looks like to get to Indianapolis and be in the Final Four, which I guess the whole thing is going to be in Indianapolis. So yeah, there you go. But I think that's, they're not going to see four teams that will be more challenging than maybe two or three different four game stretches they've already played. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be scared, not going to be intimidated. And they'll have a coach that can say, okay, that's our path. That's fine. And here's how we're going to navigate it. And here's how we're going to attack it. And we're going to take it possession by possession and we're going to go get it done. So I'm excited as a Sooner fan. And I think you should be too, is that this is a team that has no ceiling. Essentially, they're a team that's a sum of its parts. You don't have to rely on one guy to carry you. And that's exciting. That's team basketball. And it's a lot of fun to watch.
This is a team that can play with anybody. And they've proven that so far, especially over the last month of the season. They've played with everybody and they've hung in there. Even that Texas Tech loss just a week ago. Was that a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago? It was close and it was a hard fought game. And they're proving that they can play various styles. They can play up tempo. They can play grinded out. They can score with anybody, that they've got depth scoring, that they're not just relying on one guy all the time. Now, Austin Reeves is the one that's filling up the box score, but you got a bunch of other guys that are putting in buckets as well. And so it's really exciting to watch. And I think it's going to be really fun over the next month and a half to see just what this team can do, especially as we get into the Big 12 tournament, get into the March Madness. Cause again, we've talked about it a lot on the show. They've got the formula. They play great defense and they hit the three ball. And that's what you need to be able to win in March. And they do that very, very well. It's going to be fun. And they've got the coach. You know, a coaching matters a lot in March. And Lon Kruger is a guy that's been around the block a lot. And if anybody's going to be able to help get them to a Final Four, it's going to be that guy.
Well, and he's done it. He's done it at Florida. He's done it at Oklahoma. And in between, he's coached in the NBA. And so this guy, and we got a poll out right now on our Twitter page. Go to Locked On Sooners on Twitter, and I want to get your take on this. So if you're listening to me right now and you go click on this poll, you'll have no excuse but to know what we're looking for here and the reason we are putting it out there. We have a poll right now that's asking, who is the best basketball coach in OU history? And when we're asking that question, what we're not saying is, well, who won the most games as a Sooner head coach and who won the most championships and who had the best players and who? No, what we're asking is, you got three choices. You got Billy Tubbs, Kelvin Sampson, and Lon Kruger. Those are your three choices. And what we want to know from you, if you have one of those three guys that you feel like is going to get the most out of their team, going to take their team the furthest, maximize their roster, run the program in a way you're proud of, which guy do you want that to be? And I just want to hear from you. We don't want to influence that. I don't think there's necessarily a bad answer to this question, but we want to hear from you, Billy Tubbs, Kelvin Sampson, Lon Kruger, who you got and why. And if you so choose and you want to dial us up and give us a take on that, leave us a voicemail, 405-698-0789. Again, 405-698-0789. I'd love to hear your reason behind who your selection is so we can kind of respond to it, react to it, weigh in on it, because I've got some thoughts about it. Been thinking about it for a little while this year. I mean, obviously Billy Tubbs passed away recently before the season, and you know, Kelvin Sampson's down the road in Houston doing his thing. So there's been a lot of conversation around that. And as the season's unfolded, certainly Coach Kruger has, you know, made a good case for himself. But I'd just like to get the take of Sooner Nation on that. So we got a poll out there on Twitter. Go vote on it. Call us in. Give us a take. We'd love to hear it. And John, also coming up this week on the podcast, got some other good things coming. You know, we've been having a lot of conversations around Austin Reeves and does he have any NBA future? We're going to bring on Ryland Styles of Locked On Thunder, the phenomenal, not the phenomenal AJ Styles, the phenomenal Ryland Styles of Locked On Thunder to talk about.
Phenomenal one.
Yes, the phenomenal one. Ryland does a fantastic job on Locked On Thunder. If you're a Thunder fan, you don't listen to him, go check him out. But he's going to come on with us and talk about where he sees Austin Reeves as an NBA player. Does he have a future there? What does he need to do? And also, should he come back for this extra year? Because all these Sooners are getting eligibility freeze right now. So Brady Manick can come back. Austin Reeves can come back. Should they? Could they? Will they? We'll talk about that as the season unfolds as well. But also, John, we've got a new Locked On Sooners Players Lounge recording taking place this week. We'll be getting that out to you soon. It's going to have some big-time Sooner legends that you'll be very familiar with, including former Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, Rufus Alexander, offensive lineman Wes Sims, former San Diego Charger, and also a former first-round pick, the godfather of OU wide receivers, Mark Clayton, and potentially a Butkus Award-winning linebacker as well. And we'll just leave that there and let you guess at who that might be. But yeah, some big time news coming and big time episodes coming of Locked On Sooners podcast. So make sure you go and subscribe wherever you get those podcasts.
Yeah. And we're now available on radio.com. So you can check us out there. Apple, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you are subscribed to the Locked On Sooners podcast. Also, if you got a question for David or myself or in, yeah, hit us up. We want to do answer your questions on our Twitter Tuesday edition of the Locked On Sooners podcast. So make sure you send us your questions. You can DM us. You can send it to us on Gmail, lockedonsooners@gmail.com, or through Twitter. I'll resubmit a question for you asking for those questions. We had great questions last week for David based on his experience as a walk-on and his recruitment experience. So if they're football related, basketball related, you want to hear what we have to say about something, definitely hit us up. Yeah. So make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Sooners, on Facebook, Locked On Sooners Podcast. For David Walker, I'm John Williams, Boomer.
Sooner.